Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and a little later in the hour, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will join the show to answer your tree questions. But first, we're going to start with rhubarb, and Linda Knave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, is here. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Charity.
And Richard Giron, ISU Horticulture Specialist, is here as well. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
You know, it's funny, we talked about peonies last week, and I feel like peonies and rhubarb go hand in hand, because when you look at farmsteads all over Iowa, those are the plants that have been there forever.
Ever. Yes.
Yep, you're right. You're absolutely right. And a lot of their culture, the way you plant them, the way you divide them, are somewhat similar too. So,
well, let's talk about getting rhubarb established. That's not something that a lot of people on those old farmsteads have to do, because somebody else did that work years and years ago. But when you want to start from scratch, what's the best way to start?
The best way to start is to start with a division or a plant that you buy at the garden center. You can find some really good varieties now. The trend, I think, now is to get varieties that have a real red stem. And some of those varieties are like Canada Red, Crimson Red, McDonald, or Valentine, which is very, very indicative of a red stem. And then there's Victoria, if you prefer the old-fashioned green type. So there are certain varieties that are recommended for Iowa. So if you go to the garden center, that would be what you would be looking for. The best time to plant is really early in the spring, because that's about the time you divide too. Right now in this heat, they might struggle to get well established. You might want, if you're going to divide someone's rhubarb, wait till fall now. Don't do it. Definitely don't do it now. The best time to divide someone's is in the early spring, just when you start to see those little knobs come out of the ground. That's the time. And you dig the whole clump, because you don't know what's there underground. You want to see where the new buds are, and you want to leave about 2 to 3 buds on each division with a good root system connected to it. So each division should have a good root system. And then rhubarb needs a couple years just to get established. Don't harvest the first couple years. Third year, maybe for a few weeks, and then after that, you can harvest up until about mid-June.
All right, so you need to be patient with it. When you get that division or you buy that plant from the garden center, mm-hmm. How do you pick the right site?
The right site is pretty easy. Full sun, well-drained. Simple. You don't want to put it by trees, because trees are very competitive with the rhubarb, and the rhubarb just won't do very well. It needs moisture, but not too wet. So water every week to 10 days to get it well established. And after that, if we have a real dry, hot spell, to keep it going. Plant the buds about 1 to 2 inches deep. That's where the peony connection comes in, because peonies don't like to be planted very deep, and neither does rhubarb.
When you plant it, do you want to do anything to prepare the soil?
Yeah, you can work it up real well with a fork. It doesn't need a big space. You want to plant them a few feet apart, because they do spread out if you're putting in more than one. Most people will only put in one, because that'll give them plenty of rhubarb. But if they choose to put in more than one, then I would at least plant them 3 feet apart, because they're going to spread and the leaves are large. Prepare the soil, work it deeply so that the plant becomes well established. Amend the soil with manure if it's very tight, or with compost if it's a very heavy soil, to allow and improve the drainage. And you can work a little 10-10-10 fertilizer into the soil as well, about half a cup or so. Work it in nicely, and then plant it, and then water it. Now, if you're transplanting in the fall, you might want to put a good layer of mulch over the top of it, a loose mulch such as straw or other coarse materials, because you need that to get well established before the ground freezes. So the best time in the fall would be mid-September through October, the best time to plant a new division.
And in that first year or 2 years, is there anything in particular, other than, you know, making sure that it has enough moisture, anything in particular that you need to do?
Not really. You could go in the spring if you fertilize some of your other plants and again put another about a half a cup around the plant, work it in. Don't put it on the leaves, of course, but work it in around the plant and water it in. And that will really help it out as well. And then after about the fourth year, when you think, oh, now I get to harvest, don't take more than a third to a half of the plant, the stalks at one time when you're harvesting, because they do need something to replenish themselves and to build up their food reserves and their root systems. So never harvest too much at one time.
Well, and you mentioned harvesting, you said well into June. So I know people who harvest in July and August. Why do you want to avoid that?
You want to avoid that for the sake of the plant. It has nothing to do with the flavor, although the stalks could get a little woody in the summer. Typically, they don't become poisonous or the flavor doesn't go too bad. But it's for the sake of the plant. You want to discontinue harvesting so that plant can rebuild up its food reserves for the next year's crop. The more you harvest off of it, the weaker the plant is going to be. And you may find if you continue to do that, next year's stalks are going to be real thin and pencil thin and spindly.
Now, we've talked about the longevity of rhubarb, if the site is right. How long can it live?
That's a good question.
We don't know yet, huh?
Longer than me, because there have been rhubarb plantings that I recall as a child, and they're still there. So if you take care of them, treat them well, divide them occasionally, and, you know, they can be in the same spot for 10 years without being divided. Then all of a sudden you go out and you think, this clump has taken over half of my garden. Then you can go out and divide. But they're happy just the way they are.
Now, rhubarb plants will sometimes go to flower. What is that? What's happening when that happens?
Well, actually, I've seen some rhubarb stalks early this season start sending up a flower. Some plantings have. And the flower is related typically to a stress event. It could be temperature related. It could be moisture related. It could be vigor, just overall plant vigor that causes that plant. And it's, sometimes it's old plants as well tend to send up the flower stalk. No fear. Doesn't mean there's something wrong. Just go out and pull that out. You wouldn't want to use that. Don't use it and eat it. But you will want to just get it out of your garden. You can throw it on the compost pile or whatever.
And why do you need to get rid of it?
Because it tends to drain the plant of its energy as well. Plants put a lot of energy into developing flowers and seeds. And so by removing it just as you see it, that plant is going back into its vegetative state and putting effort into producing nice, hefty stalks and a vigorous plant.
All right. So as soon as you identify that flower, you want to get rid of that.
Yes. And it's easy to see because it's a big white cluster right in this, typically in the center of the plant.
You already mentioned you don't want to harvest for the first couple of years, maybe not much harvesting the third year. And then after that, sometimes we will start to see things wrong with our rhubarb. I live in an old farmstead and our rhubarb patch is actually terrible. And I think it's because trees have grown up nearby. But what are some of the pitfalls that you see with rhubarb? Because I know it grows like a beautiful weed for some people, but for others, they really struggle.
A lot of it might be related to moisture and shade because they do like full sun. And if you plant it too close to trees or shrubs, and maybe at one time they weren't by a tree or a shrub, but as the tree or shrub ages, grows, spreads out, it becomes in the shade. So make sure that it gets full sun and well watered. Under a tree, that tree is going to suck up all the water and the rhubarb will not get much. So that, and then that puts the plant under stress. Under stress, the plant does not perform well, may send up seed stalks. It doesn't have the vigor to produce the nice, healthy stalks that you want to harvest in the spring. So take a good close look at that.
Now, Stephanie in Cedar Rapids emailed to ask my next question for me. So she says, for whatever reason, rhubarb always seems to grow just to spite me. I do nothing to cultivate it, and it just comes back and spreads further every year. Do I need to worry about it eventually taking over my vegetable garden, or will it settle down at some point?
It will settle down. They spread very slowly. The clump just kind of spreads. It doesn't have like an underground rhizome like some prolific plants do. So just keep it in bounds. And if she does find it's growing too well, she can dig it in the fall and divide it. But you don't want to dig the whole clump. And then cut it into chunks or pieces with about 3 buds and good root system on each piece.
All right, you dig the whole clump, cut it, and then replant it or share it.
But and then, share it, yes.
Then in replanting, you'd have to give it another 2 or 3 years, right?
Right, right.
So you're starting over mm-hmm. in a way. I have heard some people say that they love to plant rhubarb because it outcompetes grass and can actually keep grass from encroaching in their garden. Is that a way you've heard people talk about using rhubarb?
Well, I've never heard of that, but I can see it could happen because the clumps are so dense that the rhizomes from the turf grass can't get through them. I wouldn't plant that intentionally for that purpose because by the time the rhubarb does get to that stage, the grass will already found its way back into the garden. But it does help. An established planting will keep the grass from growing in that area.
Well, and when you look at rhubarb that's been around a really long time, often it's not actually in a garden. Would you recommend maybe picking a different site for your rhubarb apart from your vegetable garden?
A lot of people do. They have it at the side of their house, almost like you would a shrub. Because they do grow nice and tall, and they aren't bad-looking plants at that. The stalks are very pretty, bright red, glossy green leaves. So many people do plant them out of the garden just because of their ornamental value.
Do you have a preference for red or green?
I like red.
Really?
I do.
I'm a green fan. I like the flavor better of the green.
I'm a colorful person, and I like to have color in my food, so I like the red.
Well, I do. I think the red is more popular in desserts because mm-hmm. it does give you that sort of classic rhubarb
right.
color.
Right. But sometimes rhubarb is called pie plant because we use it a lot in pies, but the classic red color is something that's been kind of bred into it because the old rhubarb was green.
All right. Well, I like both green and red. Mm-hmm. But all right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about rhubarb, but of course, you can join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants in your life. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Giron, ISU Horticulture Specialist, and also Mark Vitosh will join us in just a moment, DNR Forester. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Mark Vitosh is also here, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And let's jump right into questions. Steve is on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, Steve. Steve, are you there? All right. I think we've lost Steve already. So let's go to Luann in Johnston with a tree question for you, Mark. Hi, Luann.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, our daughter has a 74-year-old tree that was struck by lightning 6 weeks ago. There was bark all over the backyard. There is a 3-foot-long and 3-inch-deep crevice in the bark. Tree has leafed out, but at the top shows stress. There are several branches that are dead. The question is, can this tree be saved?
It depends, Luann. It all comes down to time. It really depends on how hot that strike was and how much damage it actually caused to that tree. And you may not know for another year or two to how much damage is actually there. So if the tree is still structurally okay, I would just leave it alone. I would maybe take some, if there's bark that's or pieces of wood that are actually kind of flailing out, you may cut those little pieces off, unless it's an oak. If it's an oak, I would just leave it alone. But basically, just give it some time. I wouldn't put any type of sealant on it or anything like that. I've seen trees. I looked at a tree the other day that was probably struck by lightning 25 years ago, and it's perfectly fine. It's okay. But sometimes those trees will respond if it's hot enough and that electricity goes throughout the growth rings or the growing area of the tree. It can cause significant damage. So you probably won't, even if it's alive at the end of this year, you still may see some decline or dieback over the next couple of years related to that. So if there's some dieback and it's, you know, less than 20 or 30%, you could have some of that pruned out at some point, and then just wait and see. You also may, if that crack is deep and that tree is close to a structure where it could actually fail, you probably want an arborist to look at the structure of that tree to make sure eventually it won't be a risk. But if you try to seal it or anything like that, you'll trap decay and other things in there, and you'll make it worse. It'll try to seal itself, but it'll be a long time coming.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Luann. And now Steve is on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I've got some rhubarb plants in my garden. We're back to rhubarb, sorry.
No, that's good.
One of them is fairly old, and the other three are probably a couple of years old. And last year, all four of them started putting out the seed pods, and none of the rhubarb ever seemed to ripen for use. And this year again, all four of them are coming up with seed pods like crazy, and the stems don't look edible again. Anything I can do or just...
Well, that would suggest the plants are in very poor health, that they're trying to produce seed before they might die.
Okay.
And so what I would do is promptly cut those off, cut them off as soon as you see them.
All the way to the bottom.
All the way to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we have some dry periods this summer, make sure they have plenty of water. Do everything you can to encourage vigor. So maybe even a little bit of fertilizer if you haven't fertilized this spring. So a little bit of fertilizer, maybe some water during the summer. Do not harvest at all this year. And hopefully next spring, they'll be much larger and more vigorous.
Okay. What kind of fertilizer do you recommend?
I would just use like a 10-10-10, which is a all-purpose garden fertilizer, and just sprinkle some of that around the plant.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, let's go to Larry in Marion. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. I planted a sugar maple in October of 2016, watered it until the ground was freezing. In last year, 2017, in June, we were gone for about 10 or 12 days during the really hot, dry period. Got home and most of the leaves had turned brown. I started watering it. Eventually it did leaf out. This spring, no leaves. I thought there were a few buds coming, but I'm still not seeing any leaves. Is there any hope for that tree, or am I just going to have to wait and replant it this fall?
I think I would look at planting it this fall, Larry, replanting, because basically, even if a little bit comes, if you've lost most of the structure of the tree, you're never going to develop a structured tree anymore out of that. Even if you cut it back and it sprouts, depending on where it came from and stuff, you don't know what it was grafted to, if it was an ornamental sugar maple. So I think you'd be better off to look at replanting. Even if you scrape and it's still green, I mean, you can give it a little time, but if most of the top doesn't come back and you just get a few leaves kind of lower down, you've really lost the structure of that tree.
Yeah, it just doesn't have any leaves on at all.
Right, right.
So, thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
Thanks a lot for your call, Larry. Can't always be good news, right?
No.
All right, Steve is on the line in Mason City. A lot of tree questions today. Hi, Steve.
Hello. What What's the species of oak tree that retains its fall foliage right on through the winter?
Usually, Steve, it's pin oak, but most oaks, when they're young and juvenile, can do that too. So even the white oaks, the red oaks, swamp white oak, but most of the time, the tree that does it, even as it gets older, is pin oak.
Pin oak. Okay.
Yes, sir. And another way to identify that is a lot of times the branches on that tree are very droopy. The lower branches tend to kind of sag downward rather than go straight out. That's another good way to identify that tree.
Okay. I'm surprised that we don't see more of those around Iowa, just in as much as they provide accents to the winter landscape. Do they not do well in Iowa?
Well, it's called Interstate 35. East of Interstate 35, they do pretty well, and west of 35, they don't do as well. They are a species that's very sensitive to soil pH, and if your pH 7 is neutral, and if your pH is above 7, where it's more basic, that tree tends to get what we call chlorotic. It can't pick up the nutrient iron, and it becomes iron deficient. It's not that there's not enough in the soil, but it becomes deficient. And as you go further west in general, the soils tend to be a higher pH. But even east, on the east side of Iowa, if you have a newer yard where the soil's been removed and they bring in a little bit of topsoil, a lot of times that pH is higher, it will struggle.
How do you check your pH? Excuse me.
Richard, do you want to?
You can do a soil test.
Yep.
Iowa State no longer does it, but private labs do it. The University of Minnesota does it. University of Wisconsin does it. It's a pretty simple test.
But, okay. And where would you, where would you look for pin oak trees?
Some of the local nurseries still take it or still cover it or carry it, I guess the word I was trying to can't find the right word, but they still carry it. So I would check around with your local nurseries. But I would get that soil tested first. The other thing to remember is with those lower branches, over time, if you want 8 to 10 foot clearance eventually, you're probably going to have to prune branches probably up to 15 to 20 feet over time, slowly.
And I would verify that. Yeah. I have a large one.
Thank you. So it's one of those, and you don't want to, we could do a whole thing on when to prune, but definitely with oaks only in the winter. But timing, you don't want to just prune it up all in one year. You want to do it kind of slowly as you go up. But with pin oaks, if you want clearance, they really sag down. So you have to do that over time. But I agree with you, Steve. They're in the landscape in the wintertime. They have kind of that pyramidal shape with lower branches. They do have some nice characteristic, but sight is really critical.
Right. They're not a good tree for a small yard because of that drooping habit. My tree, I have to prune quite a bit because of the house, the neighbor's driveway, and the sidewalk. So it's a big space.
Steve, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Anna from Chicago, Illinois. Hi. Anna? All right. Let's move on, and we'll talk to Marcy in Clinton. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. I have a question about a conifer. It's got a beautiful shape. It's about 4 foot tall, but after listening to some of the ISU people on trimming trees, I realized it's got 2 leaders, equal size, but they start about 8 inches off of the ground. This is a 4 foot conifer. Is it too late to trim that second leader?
It's going to take kind of make a hole out of it, but really, if you leave that, do you know, is it a pine or spruce or what, Marcy? Do you know
it's
what kind
fir.
Of
fir? I think it's a fir.
I think it's a fir, but it's supposed to be a bigger tree. It's not a dwarf conifer or anything like that.
No.
And you say it forks at about how far off the ground?
About 8 inches.
About 8 inches. Okay. So you're basically ended up with 2 stems. And if it's kind of a V connection, that's going to be a very, very weak connection. So I would actually go out today, even though it's hot, I would prune that off when you can and try to. Usually you have to cut that little bit at an angle up to where that connection is. But it's going to leave a big hole. But if you leave that in 20 years or 15 years as those trees develop, that connection's still weak, and that could just, you could come some, wake up some morning and half of it could be laying on the lawn. So,
yeah, that's what I understand. I just didn't know if it was too late already to do that.
It is in the sense that you, I mean, again, you kind of have to look at it and say, well, what's going to be missing when I take this off? But
okay,
look at the other side of it and say, well, if I don't take this off, what's the worst of the two evils? So taking
right,
half of the tree is not good. But the other thing you could do, Marcy, actually, and what you may think about is do what we call a reduction cut. I would actually go back on the one that you're going to cut off and maybe go about halfway now and go back to a lateral branch and just cut it there, and then maybe wait till next spring and then make the final cut off that other piece to give that tree,
okay,
so it's not such a drastic removal of half the tree. But that, by doing the reduction cut, you'll actually slow the growth down on that side of the tree too, so that diameter won't get as big. But hopefully it won't be as big a shock to the tree either.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about.
Okay. But it will be a shock. But I'd rather do it now. It's one of those things, you know, cut it so you have a better tree in the future. And if it doesn't survive, you probably would have been better off to start over anyway.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Marcy. Let's go to Mary in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about sorrel, otherwise known as sourgrass, S-O-R-R-E-L. I like to make soup out of it and whatnot. I brought it from West Virginia when we moved here 5 years ago and planted it in several places, and it grew like it, the way it did in West Virginia, just wild, for several years. And I had a whole line of it along the house. I put it in some big pots, but it didn't overwinter there. But it had overwintered once along the side of the house, once or twice. And last year, it was just tons of it, and in the fall, and then nothing came up in the spring. And now last week, my husband said, "Oh, there's one plant that's come up here." What about that?
Well, we had a very cold winter, also kind of unusual in that November and early December were unseasonably warm. And then in late December, it got extremely cold, early January also. And I think that hurt a number of plants, like woody plants too, where the change was so abrupt that it may have damaged some of the plants because they weren't properly hardened. So that may have played a part in it.
Oh, so what do I do?
Well, I would
one plant.
Keep that one alive.
Well, I might want to give it some protection possibly this coming fall, where I might go out with some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth, make a cylinder around the plant, and then fill that with some straw, like in November.
All right, give it a little blanket for the winter. All right, Mary, thank you so much for your call. Anna is on the line next in Chicago. Hello, Anna.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good, what's your question?
I have a couple of questions. One is, do you have any pointers on how to grow potatoes and onions? And the second one was, you know, I live on 5 acres, so I have a large vegetable garden, but I find that the grass starts encroaching into my garden, and I don't know how to, like, get rid of it.
All right, so we'll start with potatoes and onions. Do you have a specific question or just general?
You know, I grow them. But they don't seem to have enough of, you know, I don't get a really good harvest. I don't know if I'm not watering them enough or watering them too much, you know.
Well, one thing might be the timing. Those typically are long season crops. So you typically want to get them in the ground around mid-April or so and make sure they're planted properly. But mid-April, so that they have a chance to develop and form the actual tubers or bulbs before it gets extremely hot, hopefully. So I would be aiming for mid-April on the onions and the potatoes as far as timing.
Right, and if you're planting, if you're planting potatoes, you need to plant them at least, the seed piece, at least 4 inches deep. And then it's a good idea as the plant grows to hill it up. What that means is as the plant grows and has a shoot coming off the top, when it gets to be about 6 to 8 inches tall, take some soil from around it and put it up around the plant. So then again, you only have like 2 or 3 inches sticking out. What that does is it allows more tubers to develop on stolons underneath the soil. So that may help you as well. But water is a key factor. If you go through drought and you don't water, the crop is going to react by not producing a good root system, good tuber development. With the onions, if you plant them too close together, they're not going to get very big. If you want larger onions, you've got to give them plenty of space to grow. Both onions and potatoes are not good competitors with weeds. And so if you let the weeds grow around them, the plants aren't going to become well established and grow well for you. So between weeds and water and space, that's what your plants are going to need.
All right, and we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we will talk about grass encroaching in the garden and also answer other questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Linda Nave and Richard Durant from Iowa State University Extension are here today. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, also along with us to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. We have DNR Forester Mark Vitosh here, Richard Duran, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I promised Anna before the end of the break or before the break started that we would talk about grass encroaching on her garden.
Very common, and it's basically a shovel or a tiller. You go around it every periodically and destroy the grass. There's no other way really to do it.
All right, and mulch?
Mulch isn't really going to help a great deal because most of the grasses basically creep underneath the ground from these underground stems or rhizomes, and they can push their way up through the mulch. So you have to physically destroy those rhizomes by either digging or tilling.
All right. It's just good exercise,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. It can be.
All right. Jeffrey is on the line in Stone City. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I got some rhubarb, of course. Most people do. I've been trying the last few years to get the seed to grow from the plant. Is there a good way to do that?
Never been asked that question. Have you, Richard?
No, I haven't. Basically, you would have to allow the flowers and the seeds to fully mature, and then you would remove those mature brown seeds and plant them. I'm not sure if they require any special germination requirement. I'm guessing not.
Or maybe vernalization.
Yeah, possibly. So one thing you might try would be to, again, allow the seed to fully mature, turn brown, harvest it, and then you might want to go ahead and plant it maybe a quarter inch deep, half inch deep, water it in nicely. So do this in a pot, and then maybe put it in a plastic bag, and then place it in the refrigerator for maybe a month or two, and then take it out. It may require exposure to cool, moist temperatures, and that should break it if that's the case.
All right. Well, good luck, Jeffrey. Maybe give us an update. Let us know how it goes. Kevin is on the line next in Bankston. Hello, Kevin.
Hi. I had a two-part question. My first part is my mother out at the family farm here, we have a really old lilac bush or tree. It's about 75 or 100 years old. And last year we seen the presence of the lilac ash borer in it. Killed off some substantial parts of the limbs. It came back this year and flowered. I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do to prevent it, or if need be, do we have to cut the whole tree down and let it regrow?
I think what I would probably do is maybe try to renovate the plant over several years. And so as soon as it's done blooming, I might go out and select two or three of the largest, biggest stems and cut them back to near ground level.
Okay.
And then I would do the same thing next March, late March, early April, before the shrub does anything. I would select 3, 4, 5 of the largest, oldest stems and cut those back near ground level. And over time, basically get rid of the old growth. When you do that, that will encourage new growth in the base. So you'll have a lot of new shoots. Those new shoots should be very strong, very vigorous. And I think that way you'll have a nice plant and maybe discourage the lilac borer.
Right. All right, thank you. My second question is actually getting married on June 23rd.
Well, congratulations.
We would love to, thank you. And we would love to plant a tree on our wedding day, hoping for maybe an oak, a red oak. I'm just wondering your input on that, if it's possible at all.
I would do a potted tree, Kevin. As long as you do a potted tree that has the root system with it, you know, it's been hot. We usually talk about spring and fall, but as long as you water it well, you should be able to get it through the summer. You're probably going to want to water it. You want to treat that tree like it's still sitting up above the ground and probably water it every 2 to 3 days, but just water it with a gallon or two just where the root ball is. If you do that, you should be able to get it through the summer. And red oak is an excellent choice. I love that tree.
Lovely symbolism.
We have a couple of them in the yard as well. Any size preference? How big?
I would be in the 5 to 7 foot range, you know, a quarter inch to a half inch. I wouldn't go too big, because the bigger you get, the harder, the more transplant shock there is on the tree. So medium size to me, again, that 5 to 7 foot range is the way to go. And look for a tree that has one nice straight leader with good lateral branching. That's the kind of tree that you want to get. And just make sure if you're probably not going to do any pruning on that tree probably for the first 3 to 5 years unless you have a double leader. But if you do any of that kind of, and then you'll start to lift it over time to get your clearance. The other thing to look for if you get a potted tree is to look to see if there's any circling roots or if it's root bound. If it's root bound, like when you pull it out of the pot and you can see those nice white roots in a big circle all the way around, you're going to actually want to, this sounds drastic, but you're going to want to box cut it. You're going to want to take a handsaw and go just about a quarter inch in and cut straight down on all four sides of that root ball so that the remaining roots will go straight. If you don't do that, and you can't unwrap them and pull them all out because that'd be too big, so you're going to have to box cut that. If you don't see that, just frill up the roots a little bit. And the other thing to watch for real critically is when you get that tree in the pot, actually take your hands and dig for what we call the root collar. That's where the root starts and the trunk stops, and that's usually a swelling. And sometimes if there's a little extra soil, you need to pull away and find that, and then use that to measure the depth at which you want to plant that tree, because you don't want to plant that tree too deep. That's a real critical mistake that we make.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks so much
for
the call.
More than you wanted, but.
I think that's probably exactly what he wanted. Congratulations. I hope you have a wonderful wedding day and get a beautiful tree. Carrie's up next in Ankeny. Hi, Carrie.
Hi there.
What's your question?
There are three of us neighbors that have an ornamental pear tree. And this spring, it had lots and lots of blossoms, looked beautiful in the spring. Then as the blossoms fell, everything looked brown on the tree, like it was dead almost. And then I just noticed in the last day or so, kind of where some of the smallest twigs come off, it looks like there might be some new leaves developing. Has that been damaged? Is it going to survive?
Time will tell, Carrie. And actually, I got a call from somebody this morning in the Iowa City area that was kind of talking about something similar, and she's going to send me pictures, so I haven't seen what she's looking at yet. But there could have been some bud damage with that late snow that we had or something like that, and the blossoms didn't get damaged. The one thing that we have on pears this time of year is a disease called fire blight, but usually they'll leaf out, and then you'll see black shoots start to die, and they'll get what we call a shepherd's crook. But that does get moved around on the blossoms, too. So all you can really do is kind of wait and see. But it doesn't sound real positive to me. The trees that I that I heard of this morning didn't sound real positive either.
They may want to send a sample to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State. That might be a solution or some way to maybe ascertain what may be going on.
Right.
So if you go to Iowa State University, if you go to the search box in the upper right-hand corner, simply type in Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. It should go to the clinic website, and there they tell you how to submit a sample to Iowa State.
Okay, one other quick question. I have several trees in my yard that have a lot of roots that are growing along and slightly above grass level. Is there anything to do about that?
You do not want to cut them, sir, because that can cause a lot of damage, and you don't want to keep adding soil. The challenge that we have in a lot of our yards, is it a newer development or even last 10, 20 years? Or?
What was your answer?
About 15 years old.
Yeah. A lot of times those soils are pretty shallow, Carrie, and so those roots are only going to grow where the environment's good, and a lot of times they can't get any deeper. So they're just basically adapting to the conditions they're in. And so the challenge that you're going to have is those roots are going to stay there, and they're going to expand, and so they're going to get higher. One option, which is actually better for the tree, and you can't go all the way out, but some of those areas would be to mulch larger circles and just keep it in a mulched area. But the challenge is that's going to continue. So all you can do is try to avoid damage because you don't want to fill and you don't want to cut because that's going to cause a lot of damage long term.
All right, Carrie, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Al. Linda, how would you grow edible cherries in Ames, preferably Rainier?
Oh,
That was specifically for you, Linda, from Al.
How would you grow them? Yeah, well, I would start go ahead.
I would say that I would not try Rainier.
That's the one thing. Yeah, that is not a reliably hardy variety for here.
Right. That's a sweet cherry.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look for possibly gold, black gold, or white gold. They're much hardier. They have a reasonable chance of survival, but Rainier, being they're not nearly as hardy.
All right. The grocery store is where you get those.
Yes.
All right. And sour cherries grow
very
better.
Well.
They grow very well. Yeah.
And I consider them to be edible, but my love of rhubarb and my love of sour cherries, I think that goes hand in hand. All right. Here's a question from Chris in Denver. This seems to happen most springs to our hackberry tree. They lose most of their first set of leaves. The remaining leaves usually are very misshapen, appearing as if they've been eaten. Do they suffer from tatters like oaks do? They seem to come out of it eventually, but I don't know if this is harmful to the trees in the long run.
I'm going to take this one, guys.
Okay. I'll add something, maybe.
Okay. There is also hackberry tatters. And again, we've talked about oak tatters, completely heavy loads on this show many times, and we still don't know exactly what's causing it, but we have seen hackberry tatters quite a bit. And the one thing that we actually saw this year and I had reported was the leaves came out, some of them, and all the leaves just kind of fell off, and then the petioles looked kind of damaged. But if you have that nice kind of clean, looks like an insect, if you look at it with a hand lens, most of the time that is not insect damage. So there was something that damaged that tissue. We don't know 100% what it is, but then that tissue falls off. One of our concerns is if you have a tree, and actually I've had reports up in northern Iowa that some of those trees just look like there's nothing there. Well, if that happens year after year, at some point that tree's
gonna
start having some problems. Yeah. So there could be secondary borers, root rots, and other things coming in. And I do know in northern Iowa this year, but in eastern Iowa, I'm seeing a little bit of tatters, but not what, you know, last year we had over 1,000 calls in central and northern Iowa, and eastern Iowa still wasn't that bad. I am seeing tatters over here. But one thing they can do, even if it's a larger tree, later this summer, if they can put a soaker hose around it, give it some water, just to try to reduce the stress, that's about all you can do at this point until we figure out what's going on, because it is a big concern.
There are some trees in the Ames area that are dropping hackberries that have dropped a large number of leaves. Some trees are perfectly fine. Others have dropped their leaves quite heavily. Now, we also saw this in 1998 and 2004. At the time, They couldn't find any pest-related problem as far as disease, insects. They did attribute that to maybe weather conditions. Hmm. I will say that for the most part, hackberries are tough trees. They're not terribly pretty, I think, in some cases. As far as the leaves being holy and things like that, they have the nipple galls. But they are a pretty tough, reliable tree. And they sometimes do this, but usually by, I would say, early to midsummer, they look fine.
But if it happens multiple years,
yeah,
we could be in trouble. But you're right. I was actually there in 98 when that happened up through northern Iowa. But this year, we don't, again, we have to look at the frost data and some of that stuff, and a lot of times we don't find the frost data. So we don't know exactly what it is. But hang in there.
All right. Nancy is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
What's your question?
My question is how to get rid of an excellent crop of poison ivy.
It does look good out there this year, doesn't it?
Mine has been growing for, I bet it's been growing 20 years. I have a poison ivy tree, and I've only lived there a year, and I've had poison ivy twice. And I just need to get rid of it.
Well, it's basically physically digging it up, being very careful, obviously, or using something like glyphosate or Roundup as a herbicide.
And it may take more than one application.
Right, right. It may.
Mm-hmm. And if you're very allergic, maybe hiring somebody else to dig
it
up.
Have someone else do it, yes.
Yes.
All right, Nancy, sorry. It's bad. It is bad out there.
And
this
don't
year.
Burn it.
Do not burn it.
Yes.
Because you could inhale
yes.
and get poison
yes.
ivy internally.
Yes.
All right. Abby's on the line in Polk City. Hi, Abby.
Hi, good morning. I have two dwarf conifers that are growing happily in my backyard, but I need to prune them back. The shoots are about 3 inches long and the tips. Is it too late to do that for this year?
No. I raised dwarf conifers as well, and that's one way in which we can keep that plant dwarf is when these new candles, we call them candles, emerge, to prune them back. You don't want to prune them too late when the needles are already starting to be exposed because then you could damage the needles. But early in the stages when they're just candles and you can't really delineate needles coming out, then I would cut them back. Either you can completely remove them or just stub them off.
All right. And I'm going to ask Mary's question for her because we're almost out of time. She says that when she plants coneflowers, anytime she plants any color but pink, the flowers revert to pink. How can she keep them white or orange?
I don't have any explanation for that.
I don't either.
So. All right. Try a different nursery.
Well, no. The plant should not change color. Now, mm-hmm. if it comes up from seed, yes, it can. But that individual plant, when it comes back, should be the same color, whether it's a peony, a coneflower, or whatever it is. So
maybe.
I don't have an explanation.
All right. So if her coneflowers are seeding themselves.
Right.
Yes.
They could be a different color.
She
yes.
could see a change mm-hmm. over time. All right. Well, we are out of time. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Linda Nave, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. And Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Enjoy getting out there in the yard or garden. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.